It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and there's true history in this hour. Later on, a profile of the Merchant Marine on the Cavalcade of America. But first, it's You Are There, where the CBS News Unit went back in time via radio to bring us historical events. In this episode, Columbus discovers America, from July 28, 1947.
This is Don Hollenbeck, CBS London, October 12, 1492. After 3 days of silence, we're going to try to reestablish shortwave contact with the missing Columbus expedition. For 3 days now, there has been not a single word from John Daly, our CBS correspondent, aboard the Columbus flagship Santa Maria in the Western Ocean. No one in Europe knows what has happened. By now, the Santa Maria and her two sister ships, the Nina and the Pinta, have either sighted land, turned back to Spain, or met an unknown fate in uncharted seas. When last heard from, the fleet was still afloat, but a crisis had arisen which eloquently revealed the difficulties which have beset the little flotilla.
October 12th, 1492, London. You are there.
Europe speculates. What has happened to the Columbus expedition? Triumph or disaster? CBS takes you back to the fears, the hopes, and the suspense of 1492. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there...
You are there.
You are there is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
CBS, London, and Don Hollenbeck.
Contact with John Daly, who has a shortwave transmitter aboard the Santa Maria, from which he has been sending us regular broadcasts. 3 days ago, at the crisis of the voyage, those broadcasts ceased. Perhaps the fleet has run into adverse atmospheric conditions. Perhaps John Daly has had trouble with his transmitter. Or perhaps, and this is of course entirely possible, the Columbus expedition is lost. Our circuits are open now. We'll try once more to make contact with John Daly out in the Western Ocean. Come in, John Daly. Go ahead, John Daly. This is CBS London calling the Columbus Expedition. CBS London calling the Columbus Expedition. Come in, John Daly. Come in, John Daly. Once more, we have failed to make contact. We'll try again in a few moments. From the character of the men on the expedition, there is good reason to believe that the three ships and the men aboard them will carry this voyage through successfully. To show you the type of men and the strength of the ships they sail, we take you now to Palos, Spain, for the personal testimony of people directly connected with the expedition. Go ahead, Ken Roberts, in Palos, Spain.
Here in this little seaport town north of the city of Cadiz on the west coast of Spain, the Columbus expedition departed 70 days ago. Here the ships were outfitted. Here the 90 men aboard were recruited. Here, in a very real sense, is the heart and soul of the Columbus expedition. And here beside me now is the brother of the admiral, Bartolomeo Columbus. Senor Columbus, what do you think has happened in the 3 days of silence since we last heard from your brother's flagship?
With my head, senor, I do not know more than you, but... with my heart, I know my brother is safe and will accomplish his great mission.
What makes you so sure, senor?
Well, my brother has the best ships afloat. He has strong-hearted and tested mariners. And he is a skillful and experienced navigator. But above all, senor, my brother has a plan, a dream to reach the Indies by sailing west.
Senor Bartolomeo, how long have you been associated with your brother in his great project?
For 15 years, my brother tried to interest the kings of England, France, Portugal, and the Republic of Genoa. But they called him an impractical dreamer. Alone, the king and queen of Spain understood.
Tell me, Senor Columbus, has your brother the admiral been a sailor all his life?
Oh, yes. Our father was a poor weaver in Genoa. The sea first called my brother when he was a little boy. He sailed in the service of Genoese merchants until his ship was sunk by pirates.
Pirates? Where?
It was off the southern coast of Portugal in 1476.
And what happened to the admiral?
My brother was wounded in the battle. In the water, he hanged onto a piece of wood, and though he was bleeding and his strength was flowing from him, he swam to the shore. My brother has the great courage. He is not easily conquered. He has fought the sea before and beaten it. He is fighting it now, and he will win.
Thank you, Senor Bartolomeo Columbus. The admiral's brother has shown you the quality of the leader of the missing Columbus expedition. To tell us now about the qualities of the men who sail under him, I'm going to call on the wife of one of the mariners, Senora Ruiz. Senora Ruiz will speak in Spanish, which I will interpret, and I hope you will hear in her voice the confidence born of her faith in her husband, a faith which is typical of the families here whose men are aboard that fleet. Senora Ruiz, ¿cree usted que su marido regresará?
Si es posible para un hombre el regresar, sí lo creo. Él conoce el mar. Ha sido un marino toda su vida, y su padre lo fue antes que él.
I asked Senora Ruiz if she believed her husband was coming back. She said he knows the sea. He has been a sailor all his life, and if it is possible for a man to come back, he will. Pero, señora, ¿y qué me dice usted de esos terrores misteriosos, los monstruos, las cuevas, los remolinos? Quizás el fin de la tierra.
Nadie puede saber nada acerca de esas cosas. Si tales contrariedades se sucedieran, estoy segura de que estará en las manos de Dios. Pensarlo me da miedo. Me preocupo. No puedo conciliar el sueño de noche. Pero rezo y tengo fe.
Gracias, señora. As for the terrors of the deep, sea monsters, whirlpools, other things that are said to exist out there on the ocean, she says for such things, he is in the hands of God. Senora Ruiz admits that she is afraid. She worries and cannot sleep nights, but she does pray, and she does have faith, great faith. So does Father Juan Pérez of St. George's Church here in Palos, the spiritual leader of this little seafaring community. Father Pérez, you gave the admiral communion before he sailed, and you pronounced a benediction for the fleet, didn't you?
Si. It was a cool morning, gray before the dawn. The people stood on the dock and waved farewell. The women cried and held up their babies for their husbands to see. The seagulls went with the ships, and the church bell rang. Si. It was a cool morning when the admiral sailed in search of the setting sun.
And you think, Padre, that by...
Have no fear, my son. They are safe. The admiral sails for God on a new crusade. God will protect him.
Do you speak, Padre, of the admiral's desire for a crusade to rescue the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem from the Muslim Turks?
See, my son. That is why the admiral has sailed to the Indies, to find the treasures there and use them in the holy war against the infidel. So, as I told your colleague, Juan Dalí, just before he sailed with the expedition, they cannot fail.
But, Padre, they have been out of touch for 3 days.
Out of touch with men, perhaps. Not out of touch with God.
Gracias, Padre. And now this is Ken Roberts returning you to CBS, London.
This is Don Hollenbeck in London. Once more, we will try to make contact with our correspondent, John Daly, aboard the Columbus flagship, Santa Maria. This is CBS, London, calling John Daly and the Columbus expedition. Come in, John Daly. Come in, Santa Maria. The signal is not of broadcast quality. That sound of voices may be what the technicians call ghost voices, weird patterns of static which sound like people talking. But on the other hand, it may be John Daly trying to get through, so we'll call him in again. This is CBS London calling John Daly with the Columbus Expedition. And once again, nothing. But we'll continue to try to make contact. It's possible the fleet has run into atmospheric or ocean conditions with which men have never had any experience, because the Columbus Expedition has been sailing in completely unexplored and uncharted waters. Strange things have already happened on the voyage. John Daly's shortwave description of events on the afternoon of September 21st is typical. We made a record of that broadcast here in our studios, and we play it for you now.
This is John Daly on the bridge of the Santa Maria, 12 days out of the Canary Islands. For the past 3 days, the men aboard the fleet have lived in growing terror. We are in a sea of weeds. Nobody has ever seen anything like this before. That's the lookout at the mast calling out, "Weeds to the horizon," and the man at the bow answers, "Bow still free." As far as the eye can see, in all directions, there stretches a great meadow of weeds of green and yellow. And it looks solid, solid enough to walk on. At night, when your imagination is at work, you think you see strange shapes moving about. But the ocean hardly moves. The mat of weeds holds it down. You can put your hand in and lift up great masses of it. But there's no clear water underneath. The weeds close over the hole as fast as you make it. We first saw these weeds 5 days ago, on the 16th. The weeds were scattered then, appearing in strips and islands. But slowly they closed around us till they became the present solid mass. How long this will go on, I don't know. The men don't know, not even the admiral. And the admiral's pilot, Senor Peralonso Nino, beside me here, doesn't look very optimistic either. Senor Nino, is there any prospect that these weeds will break up and give us clear water once again?
No, senor. I very much fear that the weeds, they do not break up. They get thicker, thicker all the time.
Well, what will happen, Senor Nino, if the thickness of the weeds increases?
We will be trapped here, stranded in this desolate waste. We will be frozen in.
This is Don Hollenbeck again. A sea matted with weeds from which the ships finally emerged is just one of the unknown terrors the Columbus Expedition may be up against at this very moment. On October 9th, John Daly reported another strange situation which changed suddenly. And here's the record of that shortwave broadcast which we made in our studios at the time of its transmission.
This is John Daly a little after sunrise of October 9th, 1492. It's hot, baking hot. For 3 days, we've been sitting motionless on this heated oven of an ocean, not moving. There's not a breath of wind. We're in a dead calm in the middle of nowhere, and we're worried about our water supply. Even the voice of that cabin boy that you can hear singing in the background sounds parched. And by the way, he's chanting the traditional ditty with which he has turned the hourglass. Admiral Columbus insists that traditional ceremonies be kept up even though it's been 30 days since we last saw land. He feels that it helps morale, but the morale aboard this ship and the other two ships of the fleet can't hold out much longer. The men have only one thought now, to turn back, to go home, to write off this expedition as a failure. No longer a question of the Indies now, it's men's lives. The crews aboard the ships of this fleet are liable to make serious trouble if the wind ever blows again. But that's the matter. Something has happened. The ship is heaving and rocking and moving about. Only by hanging onto the rigging can I keep on my feet. Waves, but where have they come from? There are huge waves all slamming into its broadside, but there's no wind. And yet this ocean is in a turmoil. The men are all pointing at the water. Gonzalo! Gonzalo! A huge monster, he says. Big as a mountain, crashing the water. I can't see it. I can see only those huge waves. Admiral Columbus has come out on deck. He's ordering the men back, and they hear him. They've quieted down, but they're rooted with fear.
Una tempestante avvicina. Vamos, rapido.
They were rooted, is a better way to put it. The admiral's ordered them climbing up into the rigging like monkeys. He's ordered them to trim sail for a storm. But what storm? There's still no wind. Only those waves.
Admiral! Admiral Columbus!
Si, senor! What do these waves mean, sir? You speak of a storm, but there's no wind. Where's the wind?
It will be here, senor, soon. Somewhere out there is a hurricane. We cannot see it, but it has sent those waves rolling back.
And the wind will reach us soon, sir?
See. Soon our sails will be filled with winds once more.
To blow us home, Admiral. To blow us back to Spain.
No, senor. To blow us forward to the Indies. We sail on. Sail on.
This is Don Hollenbeck in London again. That was the last word heard from the Columbus expedition. Since then, we've had no luck getting through. Our circuits have been open all through this broadcast, and now our technician tells us those ghost voices are back and that the signals are clearing up a bit, so let's listen. We're not sure yet. It may be nothing but those strange patterns of static coming in from the Western Ocean. Wait, I thought I heard CBS. It is. It's John Daly's voice. The Columbus expedition is found again. John Daly's gotten through. He's trying to establish contact with us. This is CBS London calling John Daly. CBS London calling John Daly. Come in, Daly. Go ahead, Daly.
I hear you, CBS. Can you get me clearly? Are you getting me clearly?
Yes, we hear you, John, and we're certainly glad to hear from you again. Go ahead, John Daly. Go ahead, Daly.
I'm sure glad to hear you. You must have been wondering what happened to us.
All Europe has been wondering, John. We were afraid you dropped off the earth.
Oh, nothing as bad as that, Don. As a matter of fact, I got news. Great news. That's why I've been trying frantically to get through. I can only hope I'm coming through plainly. It must be those weird atmospheric conditions, Grim. Probably magnetic forces, because the needle of our...
What's the news, John? Have you found land?
To something that's never been experienced before...
But tell us the news, John. What's the news?
Oh, well, look. My great news is that land is near. It must be near. We haven't seen it yet, but we've had so many conclusive indications that we're pretty sure we're going to find it. Flocks of migrating birds have been flying overhead. There have been floating boards, pieces of carved wood, and... finally, just about an hour ago, a branch was fished out of the water with the leaves still fresh and a little flower clinging to it that resembles those dog roses on the hedges in Castile. Any moment now, while I'm speaking, you may hear the cannon from any one of our three ships. That's the prearranged signal that the one of them has sighted land. It's a beautiful night out here, or morning, I should say. You know, it's 2 o'clock now, October 12th. The moon is past full, riding high up on our port quarter. Jupiter is rising. Saturn has just set. The stars, however, are dim in the reflection of the moon. It's very bright, but I can still make out the square of Pegasus and Cassiopeia's chair. I can also see our other ship. The Pinta is out there in the lead, plunging and rolling and throwing spray. Her sails, with that great green cross of the Christian sovereigns of Spain on them, are bellying out into the wind. All of us, by the way, are carrying full sail, and that's probably kind of dangerous at night, where there's a chance that there may be hidden shoals, but nobody seems to care. The excitement is too intense. We just don't care about shoals. Our drive is on to the promised land, which lies somewhere out there ahead of us. Perhaps it will be some time yet before... The gun! That's it! The signal has come from the Pinta! Land! That was the signal from land! Land is out there ahead of us somewhere! I'm standing down on the deck, I can't see, but the lookout up in the mast sees it. He's pointing forward. The men are crowding the rail, straining to see. Oh, it's land all right. Land, even though I still can't make it out. Somebody else has just seen it, and there's some more of them. They're starting out of the rail, pointing forward. And I can see it now, too. A white sand cliff gleaming on the horizon. And another one of those sand cliffs, and there's a dark line of land connecting them. Land, we found what we came after. Pandemonium has broken loose here on the decks of the Santa Maria. The strain the men have been under is snapped. They're shouting and laughing and crying, slapping each other on the back. There's no limit to their joy. And I'm finding it kind of hard to talk myself. I'm all choked up. The only thing I can say is we've made it. We've arrived at the Indies. I'll be back with you soon to describe the actual landing. And until then,
I return you now to CBS in London.
This is Don Hollenbeck in London, and this is the moment all Europe has been waiting for. And now to explain the meaning of this momentous news we've just heard from John Daly, we have at a CBS microphone one of Europe's most famous geographers, the Florentine Amerigo Vespucci. We take you now to Barcelona and Amerigo Vespucci.
I am Amerigo Vespucci. It is impossible to conceive the full significance of the news which we have just heard from the Santa Maria. The land which Admiral Cristoforo Colombo has reached is Chipango, or the legendary island of Japan. Behind it lies the Kingdom of India and the territory of the Grand Khan of Cathay, or China. Of these lands, the famous Venetian explorer Marco Polo has told us that they are rich beyond imagination. The people eat off golden plates. They walk on floors of gold. The children wear pearls, and the women dress in satins and pearls. Admiral Colombo has shown the way. Shortly, many will follow. Many, many. I will be among them.
Thank you, Amerigo Vespucci. And now to the Royal Palace here, and Ned Kalmar.
This is Ned Kalmar reporting to you from the throne room of King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella in Barcelona. The king is speaking to his subjects, celebrating Columbus's sighting of the Indies. Ferdinand is a man of about 40. I've never seen him so excited before. He's permitted himself to loosen his regal calm. He's smiling, and he shakes a bit as he fumbles with the paper from which he's reading. The king has been announcing the honors and rewards which he will bestow on the admiral. Columbus will be governor and viceroy of the lands he has found, with a tenth part of the riches therein, free of all taxes. And furthermore, he will be entitled to call himself Don Christopher Columbus, Grandee of Spain and Admiral of the Ocean Seas. Now, Queen Isabella is speaking, or as she's called here in Spain, Isabel. The Queen is a charming, sympathetic woman, also about 40.
Mil veces ha justificado mi fe en él. Si necesario, las joyas mismas de la corona hubiera empeñado para ayudarlo en su empresa.
The Queen has said that she thanks the Lord that in his mercy he sent Don Christopher Columbus to the Spanish court. She has a thousandfold justified her faith in him, for she would have pledged her royal jewels, if need be, she said, to send him on his voyage.
And now for the story of the landing on the Indies shore this 12th day of October, 1492, we switch you to John Daly.
John Daly with a shortwave portable transmitter in a ship's boat rowing towards land. We're headed for a fine coral beach. Behind it are trees. Perhaps it's the park of some nobleman's estate. But there are no horses in sight yet, no palaces, no rich houses, no people in silks and pearls on the beach, no gold rooftops glistening in the sunrise. But then we're still some way off, and so, oh, I can see a man, the first man of the Indies. He's come out of the trees, and others are running out after him. Dozens of them. They're streaming down to the water's edge, and many of them, as predicted, are richly dressed in tight-fitting garments of red and blue, and no! Gee, Jehoshaphat! They're not dressed at all. What I mistook for clothes is paint. These men are painted every color of the rainbow, but otherwise they haven't got a stitch on. The natural color of their bodies is brown, light brown, a fine, well-built people, and now our boat has touched bottom. Come on, over the side we go. I'm in the water now, up to my knees, but my feet are on land, the ground of the Indies. As we wade ashore, a man of the Indies comes rushing forward. He's smiling, holding out his hand. Greetings, my friend. Greetings from Europe. I don't understand, but now Senor Torres, our official interpreter, is talking to him, and he'll have something about it in just a minute. What's the matter, Senor Torres? Senor Torres, can't you understand what this man is saying?
No, Senor, I'll ask him what land this is in Hebrew and Arabic, but he speaks a strange tongue, a language I never heard before.
But Torres, if these are the people of the Indies...
Indies, Los Indies, these people are barbarians. They do not understand me.
Here are the fleet's trumpets and drums, and Admiral Columbus is coming ashore. In front of him goes the royal standard. Behind him,
aboard the Pinzon brothers, captains of the Pinta and the Nika. The admiral has taken the royal standard and planted it in the sand. He looks across the beach and to the forest beyond, surveying this new strange land. Now he's knelt down. A hush has fallen over the crowd. Even these people here of the Indies stand around in childlike amazement, seem to know something important is happening. Admiral Columbus bent down to kiss the sand. Now he lifts his head to speak.
Catholicas majestades, vuestros señores Don Fernando y Doña Isabel, tomo posesión de esta ínsula y nombrola San Salvador.
The admiral is still kneeling, head bowed in prayer. He's taken possession of this land in the name of their Catholic Majesties, Ferdinand and Isabella, and named it San Salvador. And now the admiral has risen. He's looking curiously at the natives. No doubt he is wondering, as we are, just who these people are and why they aren't dressed the way we expected to find them, why they don't speak the language that we expected to hear. At any rate, with the official ceremonies over...
San Salvador, October 12th, 1492. Columbus discovers America.
You Are There, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 28th, 1947 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the Cavalcade of America with a story called The Sailor Takes a Wife, which tells the tale of what it could have been like to join the Merchant Marine during the Second World War. The Merchant Marine itself dates back to as early as 1775 with an heroic action against the British in nautical maneuvers that predated both the U.S. Navy and the Coast Guard. Hear this episode now on NBC's Red Network from July 31st, 1944.
The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Dick Powell with Ona Munson in The Sailor Takes a Wife. Tonight, the Cavalcade of America takes you to a fighting front that most Americans haven't heard so much about. Our story is a story of ships, of printer's ink and ships, and a boy and a girl, and just plain ordinary guys. It's a story of a boy and a girl who find out something about war and about themselves. And it's a story of the men who deliver the goods, the United States Merchant Marine. For these are the men who haven't made so many headlines, but who by the end of our first year of war had a greater percentage of casualties than any other branch of the armed services. And so DuPont is proud to tell a story of America's Merchant Marine, starring Dick Powell as Barry Arthur, ordinary seaman, with Ona Munson as Kathy, star feature writer. In The Sailor Takes a Wife by Alan Sloan on the Cavalcade of America.
The city room of the newspaper. Rattling, clacking, busy place. News, the pulse of a city. Passing through the brains and fast-typing fingers of competent and unrattled people. Coming out in marching words and headlines. Leg men, copy readers, photogs, and rewrites. And a city editor taking the master pulse.
City desk. Well, this is the city editor. Okay, I'll turn you over to a rewrite man. Hold on. Hey, Buck, pick up this call on three, will you?
Okay, Barry, I got it.
Oh, Barry, are you pretty tied up?
Not for you, Kathy. Why?
Well, what did you do with the snapshot of that Corporal Saunders, the one we ran with my story yesterday?
Oh, it's around here somewhere.
Well, I promised his mother I'd return it, and they haven't got it back in engraving,
so I don't know. It's here. It's here. There.
Oh, my Barry. You might have had them clean it up a little.
She's lucky to get it back at all, the way this paper's run. Oh, by the way, that was a swell yarn on that soldier, sweetheart. Nice. Lots of feeling.
Well, that's more than I can say for you sometimes.
Now, where did that come from?
And don't call me sweetheart.
Now, here, look, let's get this straightened out, honey. Buck, watch the desk for a while, will you?
Okay, pal.
Let's go back into my office, Kathy. I want to talk to you.
In your capacity as city editor, Mr. Arthur?
No, this is me talking, Kathy. Me, Barry. The guy you... skip it for now. Watch the door. Now, Kathy, honey, what's wrong with you? Or is it me, or what's bothering you? If you're sick, I can get you a couple of days off.
I am sick, Barry. Heartsick.
A tough little reporter like you?
And I'm sick of being a tough little reporter. Oh, Barry, that's all you think of nowadays. Reporters, bylines, headlines, deadlines. Don't you know there are people in the world?
Well, Kathy, I know, honey. I've been awfully busy lately. We both have.
Don't flatter yourself. I'm not thinking about me. I'm thinking about those kids.
What kids?
Those servicemen you've had me writing the feature stories about. Those poor, plain Main Street Johnnies that maybe won't come back.
I know, yes. You've been doing a swell job, Kathy.
Sure, worming my way into some soldier's family, trying to get a picture out of them for the paper. Wangling the worry and heartbreak out of them, just so you can make a Roman holiday and headlines out of, oh, what those boys go through.
Now, wait a minute. Don't you think the public ought to hear about those things?
Don't kid me, Barry. You're not thinking about that. You're thinking about news, headlines, circulation.
Kathy, that's not fair and it's not true and you know it. A newspaper man in wartime has a responsibility to let people know what those kids in the service are doing. To let people know the sacrifices and the hardships and the horrors they go through. We're doing an important job, Kathy. There's only one job in the world that's more important, and that's the job those kids themselves are doing.
All right, if it's so important, why aren't you doing it?
Oh, so that's it.
Well?
Why am I sitting around here protected by a deferment? Where's my uniform? Is that what you mean?
Oh, Barry, I didn't say that.
Well, it's what you mean, isn't it? Isn't it? For you, I've got to be a hero. I've got to wrap myself in a flag and do something noble.
Oh, Barry, please. It isn't that. It's just that... Oh, well, sometimes I wish you had a little more real feeling for what those boys go through instead of thinking of them as just good copy.
And you think a fine way for me to get that feeling would be to go through a little myself, hmm? Okay. Okay. Why don't you come right out and say it?
Oh, Barry, I don't want you to go rushing off to an induction center just to prove what a big boy you are.
Induction center? Me? Hey, listen, Senator. I'd take more than your kneeling to get me to an induction center. But you couldn't get me down there in a straitjacket.
All right, you men, keep in line. This is an induction center, not a bargain sale.
Next. Name?
Barry Arthur.
You got your card?
Right here, Doctor.
Mm-hmm. City editor, eh? Thought you fellows rated deferments.
Well, we do. Any
physical disabilities?
Why, no. None that I know of.
What's the matter with that leg?
Oh, that? Oh, that's just a trick knee, football.
Let me see it. Not so good, is it?
Well, I can get along in it, Doc. I get along fine.
Can you? Here. Now, let's see you walk across the room.
Sure. Well, Doc, what did you do to it?
I just put a little pressure on it. Same thing you do to it about 15 times your first day at basic training. I'm sorry, son.
You can't take me?
With that leg? Not a chance.
Okay,
next.
You men who didn't make it, over this way.
No, they shouldn't turn me away. I got the right to join up.
Oh, come on, Pop, you heard him. You're too old.
Well, I wasn't too old to send my son to the army to worry about him, was I? Oh, no. They should take me. They should...
Now, skip it, Pop. You tried, so call it quits.
Yeah, well, maybe I ought to give up hating, too, huh?
What do you mean, hating?
What my boy's fighting, that's what I hate. Maybe I ought to call that quits, too, huh?
No, you shouldn't. But where do you go from here, Pop? Where do I go from here? Back to the desk and sit the war out? Sorry, brother, bad knee. Go home and knit sweaters. You're no good for the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Coast Guard.
Yeah, well, I still got my seaman's papers way back anyway.
So what?
Well, haven't you heard of the civilian Navy?
What do you mean, the civilian Navy?
Merchant Marine.
Well, what about it? Who do they ever fight?
Listen, the first year of the war, the Merchant Marine had plenty of casualties. Plenty. Don't you ever read the papers?
Yeah. Now that you've mentioned it, I think you've got something there, Pop. Those guys really are heroes at that.
Well, I never heard any of them describe themselves that way, but...
But they might take in a man who's too old to carry a rifle, huh?
Could be.
And a young fellow with a bum knee?
Could be, son. Could be.
And what are we waiting for? Come on. Hiya, Buck. How does it feel to be city editor at last?
Oh, hello, Barry. We were just wondering what you're going to do now that...
Yeah, now that I've been turned down. You heard, huh?
Yep.
Well, you can ask Kathy after I leave.
After you leave?
You heard me.
Why, Barry, where's your straitjacket?
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Kid me. Kathy? Oh, Kathy, could we go someplace and talk?
Well, what's the matter with right here?
Oh, Kathy, I just wanted to tell you
about your being rejected? We heard about it.
Oh, listen, Kathy, I've signed up with something just the same. I did want you to know about it. It took me for the Merchant Marine.
Oh, Barry, you didn't have to do that.
Well, I'm in it. I'm in.
All right. How do you want me to head the story? The city editor joins up. Isn't it wonderful?
Well, what did you want me to do?
I didn't want you to make a grandstand play to impress me or anybody else.
Well, I didn't do it for that. I did it because, well, I felt that...
Oh, I'm sorry, Barry. Maybe it's partly my fault, too. Maybe you will do some good somewhere, on a ship or something.
Kathy, suppose I do some of this good you're talking about. Will you?
Will I what? Barry, when are you going to realize that I don't count in this? That's what I keep trying to tell you. A real person doesn't go to war just to be a hero for a girl. The girl doesn't count.
You count to me, Kathy. And I, I thought maybe I'd get to kiss you goodbye, but...
Please, Barry, don't.
Oh, all right, all right. Let's drop the whole thing. I'm taking off now. And...
Well, I wish you luck.
Oh, and in 2 or 3 months, I'll be at sea. A lot can happen out there. It's a good place for a newspaper man. I'll do all right.
I do wish you luck, Barry. Oh, you poor, mixed-up guy.
Hoffman Island. A 2x4 chunk of man-made land on the rim of New York Harbor with the Atlantic at its very doorstep. Training station. The beginning of 13 grueling weeks that it takes to make a merchant seaman out of a bootblack or a banker or a city editor.
And remember this. Every one of you is here by choice. You didn't get picked for this service. You volunteered. Whatever you're in for, remember you asked for it. Okay, section leader, carry on.
Okay, form in squads and follow me.
What do you know about that, Pop? You asked for it, he said.
Well, didn't we?
Sure. But what?
Don't worry, we'll find out.
Drill and more drill. Climbing ladders, climbing ropes, toughening up. It's not easy on a man who's 50 years old. It's not easy on a man who's always earned his living behind a desk, like a city editor. There's no time to bellyache. There's too much to learn. Big things and little things.
Okay, you guys have had enough time now. Hold up those sheepshank knots.
Here you are.
How's this, Bolson?
Now, let me see. Now, look, fella. The loop wants to run over and through, see? Like this.
Knot tying, sailmaking, signal recognition, boat handling, engine takedown, life drill, and practice. For a moment that may come to any merchant seaman, that every merchant seaman dreads the most. When you're on a tanker and she's hit, and all around the sea is covered with a flaming slick of oil and gasoline. At Hoffman Island, a squad of men are lined up at a diving board above a practice tank.
Okay, light her up. Light up that oil slick.
Boy, look at her burn.
First man, jump! Feet first, hands over your mouth.
Okay, Pop, here goes nothing.
Stay under and swim! Swim!
He made it.
You're next, Pop.
Okay.
Keep those hands over your yaps. Take a deep breath. Stay under the burning oil and swim, blast you, swim. Stay under and swim.
Thirteen weeks of it. Night and day on that little island. And then...
I do solemnly swear...
I do solemnly swear...
that I will abide by the rules and regulations of the service...
That I will abide by the rules and regulations of the service...
and obey the lawful orders of the persons in authority...
and obey the lawful orders of the persons in authority...
pursuant thereto during my enrollment...
pursuant thereto during my enrollment...
and I seek enrollment in the service in good faith...
Ordinary Seaman B. Arthur.
Here.
Ordinary Seaman J. Burroughs.
Coming up.
Report to shipping office. Report to shipping office.
Rendezvous, somewhere in the Atlantic. It's a long haul across the Atlantic in wartime. A nameless ship out of a nameless port, beating down the coast, heading for your rendezvous, waiting for your convoy. 2 days, 4 days. 5 days.
Well, we'll be picking up our convoy about daybreak.
How can you tell that, Mac?
Fingers is the name, sailor. Call me Fingers.
Okay, Fingers. How can you tell?
Me? Listen, pal, after you've been doing this as long as I have, you can smell it. Everything that's going to happen, you can smell it. Most of all, trouble.
I wish I had been doing this as long as you have.
Oh, so you like the racket, huh?
Yeah, sure.
How about you, Pop?
I like it fine. I got a boy over there on that side somewhere.
Yeah? And you're kind of old, ain't you?
Yeah, just turned 21. What's it to you?
How old am I?
You?
Oh, say about 40, maybe 38, 39.
Uh-uh. 28.
No.
No. Yeah. 28 going on 100. I look old, huh?
Well, I...
Listen, baby, listen. You get yourself torpedoed 3 or 4 times. Raft off ship after ship. Living your life out on these rust buckets. Uh-oh. Well, I'm off watch. Now get me some jabber. I'll be seeing you.
Finger's been sounding off again?
Yeah. Kind of jumpy, isn't he?
Torpedo tappy. 4 times. The last time he lost the fingers in his left hand.
Oh, hence the moniker.
Yeah, but he's got a right to be jumpy this trip.
How come?
You know, we're carrying, son, gas. About 1 million gallons of high-octane gas.
You are listening to Dick Powell as Barry Arthur, ordinary seaman, and Ona Munson as Kathy in The Sailor Takes a Wife. On the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. Our play is the story of the merchant marine and the men in it, who man the ships of America's lifeline to the battlefronts. As the play continues, we find that Barry Arthur, a newspaper city editor who has joined the Maritime Service to vindicate himself in the eyes of Kathy, his star reporter, has completed his training, and he and his shipmate have received their first sailing orders and are aboard ship on their first cruise bound for a convoy rendezvous somewhere in the Atlantic.
It's a long haul in convoy across the Atlantic. Speed held down to the pace of the slowest freighter. 5 days, 10 days, 15 days.
The lame, the halt, and the blind. That's what they're giving us. The lame, the halt, and the blind.
Ah, cut it out, Fingers.
Yeah, well, you know as well as I do. What good are guys like him and Pop going to be to us if we get into a jam?
Pipe down.
Hey, what's going on?
Say, what is this?
Nothing.
What's the matter? Is this a private argument, or can anybody get here?
There wasn't no argument.
No? Well, I'll tell him. Look at him. Look at him. The lame, the halt, and the blood. Listen.
Listen to what?
Don't you hear it? Don't you hear it, you dummies? Don't you hear it? I'm going below.
What was the matter with him?
Nothing. Just scared, that's all.
Was he talking about us, me and Barry?
Tell you, it's just torpedo tappy, that's all. A lot of guys get like that when they're sailing through the same waters where they were torpedoed a couple of times before.
Yeah, there's more to it than that. It's right what Fingers says. Anything that's going to happen, he can smell it. Most of all, trouble.
Listen.
Yeah, it's a plane.
So that's what was the matter with Fingers.
Where is it?
There, see? There it is. Plenty high, but it's up there.
What's one little plane got to get so excited about?
Listen, son. Have you ever seen a vulture hanging around up in the sky waiting for some animal to die?
Well...
Now, that's what that plane is. He'll just watch us for days. And when we get near enough to those Nazi air bases, he tips them off. Then blooey.
Oh, a vulture.
Yeah. Just waiting. Just waiting. What's it like up there?
Oh, about the same. Here, give me some more java.
Vulture's still hanging around?
Yeah. Where's Fingers?
Well, I haven't seen him lately.
It's his watch, isn't it?
I'm not so sure he's going to be able to keep his watch.
What's the matter? He sick?
Yeah, sick in the head.
Ever since that plane's been following us.
Well, you blaming him?
He just been dumped once too often, that's all. Fingers would ought to take it a little bit easier.
Who's yapping about me?
Nobody said nothing against you, Fingers. Relax.
Relax? You think I'm nervous, huh? You think maybe I'm scared, huh? You punks.
Yeah, how about some coffee, Fingers?
You young punks. You're getting all the breaks guys like me had to fight for. Mama's boys. Send them to school. Make seamen out of them in 3 months. Slip them into monkey suits and ship them out.
Shut your trap, Fingers.
Mama's boys. The new merchant marine. Gonna man the great American fleet of the future, huh? What do you bilge rats know about the merchant service?
You wet behind the ears, you. What do you know about what a guy has to take? Did you ever have guys making cracks behind your back because you didn't wear no uniform? Did the shore patrol ever push you back on a ship after 40 days at sea when you were just dying to put your feet on dirt again? Did you ever catch a tin fish off Murmansk? No, you didn't.
Don't carry on like that, Fingers.
Get away from me, you old...
Don't hurt him, boy. I hate to do this, but... Oh, you should.
Oh, I'm sorry, but somebody had to hit him.
You did the right thing.
That's that plane up there, following us. Just waiting and watching. That's what was the matter with him.
Help me get him back in his bunk. I'll take his watch.
Yeah, of course. Come on.
Listen, the plane.
Yeah, sounds like he's coming down to have a good look.
Yeah. It won't be long now.
Hi, Barry, where are you heading?
It's my trick at the wheel, going up to relieve Fingers.
Well, how is he today?
Oh, he's been okay since that plane stopped tagging us. Want to come up to the bridge with me for a minute?
Yeah,
might make him feel better if we both kind of... Hey,
come on. Hi, Fingers.
Huh? Oh, hi, Barry, Pop.
Fingers?
Hey, what's your course?
040.
040 it is. Okay, Fingers, I'll take over.
Say, Barry, about my blowing my top last night, I...
Oh, forget it.
No, I shouldn't have gone overboard. I'm sorry. You kids are swell. Yeah, and Pop, too.
Skip it, Fingers. We've all been kind of jumpy.
Say, our pal up there seems to have left us.
Yeah, that's not so good.
Hey, maybe I spoke too soon.
Hey, that's not that same plane. Hear the difference?
Look, I can see them.
Where?
Up there. Fingers. Well, they're dive bombers. Tell them to sound the alarm.
Right.
Look, Barry, two of them are dropping down on us.
Oh, we're going to get it all right.
Alter course, 010, evasive action.
Aye, aye, sir.
Man your battle stations. Man your battle stations.
Well, here we go again.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, though. It's not so bad once they really come after you. It's the waitings that's murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here comes the first one. Hit the deck!
Kind of close, wasn't it?
Just there after, all right.
Yeah, them hindies can spot a tanker 100 miles away. Here comes another one. Look out! Duck down, Fingers, down.
Come on, Pop. No time to get to the boat.
Hey, where's Fingers?
Fingers.
Oh, there he is. He's hurt.
Fingers, you all right?
Oh, look.
Come on, Fingers. Come on, we got to jump. Give me a hand with him, Pop.
Leave me alone.
Stay here.
Don't be a sap. You guys will never make it through that burning gas with me. Go ahead, jump. Leave me alone, will you? Go on. Go ahead yourself.
Taking you. Here we go. Well, what do you know about... Hey, Kathy.
Well, what's up, Buck? Anything hot?
Yeah, I got a little job for you. Serviceman interview.
Oh, please, Buck, I can't. Not so...
Maybe you like this one. Here, read the story. Just came over the ticker.
Hmm? Mediterranean convoy. The tanker went down in less than 5 minutes. The lone survivor reached port today and is recovering in the Navy hospital, making headlines for the second time in his career as a merchant seaman. The first was when he joined the Merchant Marine 4 months ago. The former city editor, Barry Arthur... Buck! Is he...
Sure, he's all right. Read it. He's burned some, but he's all right.
Oh, Buck.
I want you to go down and get his story.
Oh, Buck, no. I couldn't. Not after...
What's the matter? You wanted a hero, didn't you? Oh,
no, not like this.
Listen, Kathy. You go down and get that story. And that's an order.
Nurse.
That you?
No. I'm...
Well, who is it?
It's me, Barry. Kathy.
Kathy? Oh. You're still covering the hero beat?
Oh, Barry, please. For a while, we thought you were... Well, we heard about the ship 3 weeks ago, and we thought you were...
Oh, take it easy, baby. I'm all right. No kidding. There. Now, take it easy.
Oh, Barry, I'm so ashamed of myself. I've been such a fool.
No, you haven't, Kathy.
But I have. Do you know what Buck said when we heard about the ship? He said, there goes a swell city editor. And suddenly I realized that I'd sent a great guy who was doing a swell job out to...
Look, baby, maybe we were both mixed up a little bit. I
You were awful right about some things. I did do it for a grandstand play. I was showing off to you. But I won't do it again.
Then you're not going back.
I am going back. But for another reason this time. Because there's fighting going on, and there's all those guys over there that need the stuff. And because there was a guy named Pop who went to sea because he had a kid in Italy. And for a guy named Fingers who went back again and again, even when he was half crazy from the strain, and for a lot of guys who would never make the headlines.
Oh, Barry, I'm so proud.
And Kathy, when I get back, your first assignment will be to marry me.
Thank you, Ona Munson and Dick Powell. To the men of the Merchant Marine who carry the materials of war across the seven seas to our battlefronts everywhere, DuPont sends its good wishes and deep appreciation. And here is Dick Powell, star of this evening's cavalcade.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the cast, Miss Munson and myself, we hope you liked our play tonight. Me, I learned something from it because I think that Barry Arthur's early lack of realization about the vital and dangerous job being done by the men of the Merchant Marine is perhaps shared by many of us. And so Miss Munson and I hope that through the parts we played for you tonight, we may have helped in some small way to do honor to those brave men who have done so much and are doing so much for all of us.
The Cavalcade of America, Untuned to Yesterday, a dramatized profile of the Merchant Marine on NBC's Red Network from January 31st, 1944. And that wraps up this hour of True History, Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.